God works funny, you know. I got a call one time from a guy, and he says, you know, I heard about a big book study that's going on up in Dallas. And I said, well, let me see what I can find out. But I know some guys in Dallas. So I called up there, and this guy sent me a flyer, and it said, Big Book Weekend. And I looked it over, and I showed it to this guy, and I went to Kenny, and I said, you know, I don't think this is what Dick was looking for, but it looks like something that we'd be interested in. And that's the way we went up, and it was Mark H. and a guy named Dave F. that were leading the thing. And it was blown away. I was just blown away. And, you know, I knew that Mark was Chris R's sponsor, and I'm a fan, a friend of Chris's, but we went up and checked it out, and it was, like I said, my story's a lot like Katie's in that I caught fire with this program at about 17 years of sobriety, and this was a level of AA that I had never experienced. This weekend, I had to take Monday off when I got back. I was my jelly headed, you know what I mean? It was working. It was a novel concept for the meetings that I've been going to. Just talking about working the whole program, you know? I mean, all 12 steps, evening review, morning meditation, you know? Kind of made me nervous. But we kicked it up a notch. And then it was probably a year after that that Mark decided, you know, announced that he was moving to Austin, of all places. He was living in Dallas at the time. And I jumped right in, you know, and asked him, you know, if he was taking any sponsees. And it's been an amazing thing. I want to take a second to thank the guys that allow me to sponsor them. And, you know, you guys know who you are in the room. We have a meeting on Thursday nights with Mark and me and all the guys that I sponsor at my house, and it's the best AA I've ever been involved in. You know, it's taken it to a whole new level. So there's a lot of AA available out there. This book is 500 feet deep once you start getting into it, you know. I'm glad to have Mark up here tonight. Come on up here, Mark.
Evening, everybody. My name is Mark Houston. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I was separated from alcohol for the last time the morning of October 19th of 1982 by the power behind the name of God. And I was a full-blown agnostic / atheist at that time. But when God comes, God comes. And that's the way that rolled out for me. And this is great. Got a balcony out there, and I just almost feel like a minister, for God's sake. I need to get some of the elders of the group to come up in your big books, and we'll take some of the newer people, come down, and just zap them right in the head. We call that the easier, softer way, right? Always looking for that. A couple of people ask me, you know, they say, you know, you're nervous. And the answer is no, not anymore. There was a time. And I have always continued to stay involved in the program and doing my own work. And there came a time when I got free of that. And I began to have a deep experience with a sentence that's in the middle of the fear inventory, seldom ever discussed in the rooms. It goes like this: instead, I let God demonstrate through me what God can do. So the reason I never worry is, the most I get is a 5 or 10 second lead-in, and the rest of it, it just flows. And that's a wonderful thing, and so there's nothing to be afraid of. So, see, because I don't know what you all need, and I don't need to know. God's very clear what you all need to hear tonight. And so he will use me as a channel in that fashion. That's one of the gifts of being in this program. It's an honor to be here tonight. 2 years, amazing. You know, Charlie and Katie and the rest of the people that were used to start this group, this is how God works. If you've done the work and you have some awareness of conscious contact, is this little idea shows up one day and it won't leave you. and you engage some other people in it. Next thing you know, you start a group called Primary Purpose. And 2 years later, as far as I can tell, it's the biggest group in Austin, Texas. Obviously, God wanted this group to be formulated. A group centered in studying the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. What a concept. Obviously, the time was right down in Austin, Texas. So the few times I get to come, I love coming here. There's a term for it. I'm not quite sure what it is, but, you know, when a spiritual movement is started, then over the years, there's a term to describe the very thing that made it successful gets lost in the length of time. And one of the reasons I love big book studies, quite frankly, of any kind, is I think we get back in touch with the primary purpose and the function of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is to have a revolutionary spiritual experience, to experience permanent sobriety, to experience power in your life. And that's the vehicle to do that, as far as I can tell. A set of clear-cut, precise, specific instructions that I got to follow to have a relationship with a power greater than myself, which would solve my problem. Because I am the problem. Wow, isn't that interesting? First time I met Katie and Charlie, we were doing this big book, and of course Katie's sober a lot longer than Charlie, so as Dave and I were going back and forth, that old Bose commercial where you'd see a guy and they'd turn the music up and his hair would be flying back, well, that was Charlie. I mean, it was like he was going, whoa, what is this, you know? And it was like they said, they kind of wandered in there by mistake. And in particular, we started talking a lot about the spiritual disciplines of the 10th and 11th step. It was interesting watching both of them, actually, at that time. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. One of the things I want to do with you all is I want to talk with you initially about my current experience. One of the things I think is absolutely critical when I talk is to let you know my current experience and where I'm at with the program. Not my program, the program. So my home group is a small group called Carry This Message Group. We started 8, 9, 10 months ago. It's an open AA meeting, meets Monday night, 6 o'clock at Club 101. I decided to get even with the dope fiends, so we're the only AA meeting in Club 101. And we have a bell and a timer, and we start with 3 minutes of meditation, and we have a chairperson, and they read a word, a sentence, out of the recovery portion, the basic text, and you have 5 minutes. And we have a timer to share on your current experience with what's being read. We're not interested in your old experience. Because the food my body ate 2 weeks ago is not what I'm living off today. And the experience I had 2 weeks ago doesn't have much validity. What's my current experience with whatever the topic is? And when the 5 minutes are over and the timer goes off, you're done. That doesn't mean you drag it out another minute because you really want to hear yourself talk. It means you're done. So... And we don't do a chip system. Boy, we're radical, aren't we? The other thing, quite frankly, we haven't really told a lot of people about it because we all like small meetings. So they'll probably get upset with me for telling you all because some of you may actually show up down there. So I do have a home group. I go to the Thursday night group. It's a group of men, Charlie and a bunch of men he sponsors. And I'm kind of like him. I absolutely love that group. We ask a lot of challenging questions. I learned a long time ago, my AA lineage, and I'll talk to you about that, believed in asking each other questions. They believe there's killing things going on in the room, and some of the killing things going on in the room is if I see somebody and they're getting way off the beam, I don't want to say anything to them. And they didn't believe in that. They believe it's okay to ask questions, the tough questions. Matter of fact, one of the things I've always liked about Katie, she asks the tough questions, you know. And I like that. We do a lot of that in that Thursday night meeting. And there's two or three other meetings that I wander into. I sponsor 7 people. They're anywhere from 2 years sobriety. I sponsor a woman who's 41 years sober. I sponsor a man who's 34 years sober. I'm currently using a man that I had in Dallas, Texas as a sponsor. And I'm seeing where God leads me in terms of being down here. I'm accountable to four people. By accountable, I mean they know every area of my life and they know what's going on with me. I believe it's absolutely essential, particularly the longer you're sober. You got to have accountability. How's it going in every area of your life? What's going on with you? Let your life be an open book to those people. Why? Because sober, I've suffered at times greatly from self-delusion. I mean, I'm not any different than the rest of you. You leave me alone long enough, I can take a group and we can get something going and entrench ourselves, and we coming out, and we're going to rewrite the big book. So, I've learned the value of accountability, and I do another thing I call steel on steel with a couple of men. And I may or may not talk about that. I currently have just finished writing a resentment inventory and a fear inventory. And I've got a little bit of writing to do on a sex inventory / personal relationships. And then I'm going to do 3 5th steps. I'm going to do a 5th step. I read inventory to the men I work with. You see why? We have spiritual consent with each other. Charlie and I have spiritual consent. What does that mean? It means he can say anything to me about anything that he sees. And I have the same thing with him. And so I'm going to read that inventory to 3 people because I found the value. There's a line in our big book, since the primary purpose group is big book thumpers, that says that I should read inventory to person or persons, plural. So if you're sitting in this room, you've been sober for a while or not very long, and you get to inventory, you may consider the idea of taking a piece of work and reading it to 1, 2, 3, 4 different people. See what happens. Now, your opinion about that, if you haven't had the experience, I'm not interested in. Right? One of my defects of character, a big one for me in step 6 and 7, was I consistently wanted to give you my opinion on experiences I never had. Now, if you're in the room and you want to write a piece of inventory and you want to read it to 3 people and then come up and talk to me about that experience, I'll be glad to talk to you about that, right? But I'm not the kind of guy to ever come to and give me your opinion on an experience you've never had. I had a minister do that with me one time about death. He wanted to tell me what was going to happen to me when I died. And I said to him, "Do you have any experience with that?" It's a spiritual program of action, right? It's experience. And, of course, he said no. I said, "Well, I know 2 men who've had near-death experiences. They describe something a little different than what you're trying to tell me. I think I would have a tendency to lean toward what they're saying. But at the other end of the spectrum, I don't quite care what happens when I leave this body. You know, a lot of the God stuff for me over the years remains esoteric and mystical, and it probably is supposed to remain that way. I think because of my experience, because I was a chronic hopeless alcoholic. When I got sober in 1982, I weighed about 250 pounds. I had brain damage, kidney damage, liver damage. Everything I owned fit in a duffel bag. And there wasn't anybody coming to visit me at family week because I'm a tornado. I had burned up, drank up every human being who ever cared about me whatsoever. I put alcohol before everything in my life. Alcohol was my master. I'm very clear on that today. Sometimes people said to me, "Well, you've never relapsed." And I said, "Well, if you had my experience, you probably wouldn't have either." I wasn't an occasional drinker. I wasn't a binge drinker. I picked up a drink and, as far as I can tell, pretty well drank for 20 years, and I ran it hard. And I didn't come to you in the best shape. When I look back in some respects, I didn't even have much to say in being brought to you. I always love it when I hear someone tell their story about how they came to AA, and what's funny to me sometimes is they actually act like they had something to do with it. We're alcoholics, right? You know, and the drink calls us. And I think at some point in time down the road, we wind up in these rooms. And I believe the hand of God is all over that. Now, what happens beyond that, I don't know. So that was my experience with it. I picked up a drink when I was 16. I drank till I was 36. Then got separated from alcohol. And everything in the big book describes me and my story. Progressive, you know, born and raised in Iowa. Second oldest of 4 boys. Got 3 brothers. As far as I can tell, 2 are alcoholics. My dad died of alcoholism. Is that why I'm an alcoholic? Don't think so. I'm an alcoholic because I drink and I have a thing they call a phenomenon of craving, which means that I take a drink and the drink takes me. That started with me, by the way, almost from my first drink. I don't know about the rest of you, but when I came to the rooms and when I really found out what was wrong with me, I was happy. Let me tell you why I was happy. There's nothing worse than being an alcoholic, not knowing you're an alcoholic, with all the subsequent behavior and all the things you do to people you love and not having an explanation for it, other than the fact maybe you're a sociopath or a psychopath, right? Like, for example, you have a loved one die, and it's probably pretty important to go to the funeral, and you take a drink a day or so prior to the funeral, and you don't show up, and you miss it by a whole state. And people have feelings about that. You're supposed to, particularly, you're supposed to be a pallbearer. You know, or you're unemployed and you have a great job interview and you meet some pals at the bar to tell them about it, and 3 days later you're still drinking and partying with them. And you miss the whole interview. And it's like, and then you wake up and I don't think I'm real different. There came a point in time where I said, why do I do that? Right? How come I'm living in Denver, Colorado? I'm living with a gal. She has a young child. I'm going to go to the grocery store and get milk. I stop at Bennigan's, and 7 days later, I come out of a blackout in Jacksonville, Wyoming, which is 800 miles away. Saying, how'd this happen? How'd I get here? Right? Now, I'm not an idiot. I did show up with the milk, which was not warmly received. But see, I had that go on over and over and over again. And it led to some very interesting questions, none of which I had an answer for. So when I finally sat down and a man took me to the big book from the title page to 164, and we got into the doc's opinion, he started talking about the phenomenon of craving, I got excited because that explained many things for which I could not otherwise account. Because I take a drink and the drink takes me, and I begin to see that. You know, I've often... The big book is amazing to me because really from the doc's opinion, which is 10 pages long, a Bill's story up to page 43, you've got about 53 pages of information that really only look at two things. Mark, when you take a drink, you lose power, choice, and control over how much. Basically, as far as I can tell, 33 pages are devoted to one question. Doesn't it seem a little bizarre that it would take 33 pages to answer that question? And then there's the pages from 23 to 43, which deal with the fact that I'm sober and my intent is to never take a drink again. I shouldn't take a drink again, but my mind convinces me to take a drink again. And I remember looking at that, and finally one day I really realized why the book spends so much time on the craving, the body, and obsession of the mind. Because if alcohol did for you what it did for me, I'm looking for every reason in the world why that is not me. Maybe I'm the hard drinker, right? You know, the book talks about a moderate drinker, and then they got this hard drinker, and you get a little excited. Because, you know, maybe that's you. You know what I'm saying? Did it impair you physically and mentally a little bit? Yeah, that's me, you know? And then, of course, then it's got this, I call it a drug trap. And here's what it is. If given sufficient reason, so I go, well, did I have sufficient reason? It says this hard drinker can stop, stay stopped, control the amount he drinks. Damn.
Yeah.
Of course, the next paragraph, what about the real alcoholic? So my experience abundantly thrust me into that paragraph. What about the real alcoholic? Then the book gets into the thing where the book says, we really don't care how much you drank, how often you drank, how old you are, how young you are. The real issue is, when you take a drink, do you lose power, choice, and control? Yes, that is my experience. I'm an alcoholic. And then those incredible pages from 23 to 43, where I look at the idea that, does my mind convince me sober to commit the most insane act of my life? And I go into my experience. I have some fairly extreme ones. I had been up. I'll give you one. Because what I have to do if I'm going to find out my truth, and I must find out my truth. Why? I must find out my truth because my experience is if I'm a real alky and don't have a revolutionary spiritual experience, I'm going to probably die from this, and it's probably not going to be real pretty. And so I want to find out my truth. Am I a real alky? Did I stumble in the room by mistake? See, I don't subscribe to the theory that if you're in the room, you're in the right place. I believe what you have to do is go through the big book and find out, is this you? Is this you? Or do you have a craving of the body? Do you have an obsession of the mind? And this idea that I get sober and then my mind takes me back to a drink. And am I involved in that? See, am I involved in that? One of the reasons that I wasn't brought to the room sooner, because I was introduced to the idea I might have a problem with alcohol many years before I was brought to the rooms, is the idea that I could go a few days and not drink. Or some days I would actually say I'm going to have two or three, and I wouldn't drink for a solid month. And what my mind did is it forgot about all the times I'm sober with a firm resolution to never drink again, and I drink. But I conveniently forget those for the few times where I said, well, I'm not going to drink because she'll leave me. Oh, pull that off for a day, yeah. You know, and then, but you take a drink and it's over. So you look in those pages. But I've been on a run mixing a few other outside issue stuff with my alcohol, and I experienced a thing they call respiratory failure, and my heart stopped. Fortunately for me, I was living with a gal who was a paramedic, and she saved my life, basically, and they put me in intensive care, alcoholic poisoning, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm in the hospital 5 or 6 days, and needless to say, by then I'm detoxed and I'm sober, and a pal came up, and he picked me up, discharged me from the hospital, and I said, we need to go to a bar. And I went to a bar, and I took a drink, and I was mixing outside issues along with the alcohol that night. And I literally had died. They jump-started. That kind of a thing. Took me on a flight for life ride. So I literally died from drinking. And five days later, you would think that would be sufficient reason. So you tell that story to a normal person, they just turn around and leave. Because they say to themselves, that man's decision-making process leaves a lot to be desired. I need to move away from him. But see, and I have many examples of periods of time of being sober. I needed to be sober. I needed to never drink again. And I had a mind that took me back. And so in the pages of 23 to 43, I found out my truth for me. And here's what it translated to. Me on my own power will drink again. You know, I go to meetings sometimes and I hear this phraseology, well, drinking is not an option. I think to myself, does that person have a clue what room they're sitting in? I'm an alcoholic. If I'm not in fit spiritual condition, this mind, drinking is an option, and the length of time away from a drink doesn't change that, ladies and gentlemen. You get me dis-ease long enough, I know what my mind will do with that. My mind's still to this day, by the way, if you're fairly new and you think you're going to come in the rooms and one day magically you will never think about drinking again, you are ill-informed. I'll be going along last week, you know, you walk in, they're starting to cool the beer off at the 7-Elevens and all the places, right? You know, and you come in and like what Katie said, you go along, you're going to get a soda, you're going to grab a water, and you walk by and you just, whoa. And see, to other people, all of a sudden, for me, because of what alcohol does for me, I go into a Cheech and Chong slow motion kind of take, and I watch the beads as I'm walking back to get the water. See, that's what alcohol does for a guy like me. And you give me a disease very long, you put me in that situation, not in fit spiritual condition, I'll pick up a drink, which is why I'm such an advocate for doing the daily disciplines of the 10th and 11th step, and I'll talk about that. I was in the rooms for about 3 years before my head cleared enough where I could find a man who sat me down, and thank God he did not work off the assumption that I knew what it was to be a real alky. And he said to me, do you know what's wrong with you? And I proceeded to be like a parrot and feed him all kinds of stuff, and I wanted to tell him about the things that happened to me when I was drinking, and so then, you know, he said things like, well, I know a lot of people that had none of that happen, and they're an alky. So what happened to you behind the drink has nothing to do with why you're an alcoholic. So what he slowly did through a series of questions, every reason why I thought I was an alcoholic, he took away from me. You know, well, I'm a Vietnam vet, and there was a lot of stuff. He said, well, I know a lot of guys that aren't Vietnam vets, and they're alkies. And I know guys that are Vietnam vets, and they're alkies. So what he did is he took that all away, and he finally looked at me and said, you don't really understand why you're an alcoholic, do you? I said, I don't think so. He said, would you like to find out? I said, yeah, I would. And he said, good. Then if you'd like to do that, you and I will sit down and start in title pages of Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're going to go through it, and we're going to take these statements, turn it into questions, see if you can have an experience so you can find out, is this you? Mark, are you a real alcoholic? He said, it's critical you find out your truth. If you want to start a set of spiritual exercises based on a lie, nothing's going to happen. So he and I met, and in a short period of time, I found out my truth about the first step. And by the way, once a year, I like to rework the first 9 steps, and I go back and I revisit this, and I remember. Honey, I'll never drink again. I take the drink, and the drink takes me, and I remember, and I remember it with more clarity. In particular, when I go back and look at my first step, and I'm thinking mostly of the latter part of last year when I did that, the longer I'm sober, well, I'll tell you what I really remember more than anything else around the first half of this deal is I remember all the times I was sober and my mind took me back to a drink. And I see that on my own power, that's what happens to a guy like me. And it makes me incredibly grateful for this loving God that I have in my life that continually sustains me and keeps me in a position of neutrality if I'm willing to do some things on a daily basis. But this is one of the reasons I'm such a big advocate of the disciplines of the 10th and 11th step, because as far as I can tell, based on what my book says, it says the reason I'm standing here sober in front of you all tonight is because I'm in fit spiritual condition. And I'm responsible for that, not God. Is God a part of that? Of course God is. But if all this program was about was having a God in your life, this big book would be 1 page long. It'd say, God keeps you sober. Have a good day. That's an easier sauce away, isn't it? As far as I can tell, there's 30 pages of action that I got to take that get me up to the disciplines of 10 and 11, and then there's a whole bunch of action I get to take on a daily basis if I believe what the book says. What do I mean by that? I mean that if you want to know what you believe, then look at your actions. If you're not working with the disciplines of 10 and 11, if you're not doing morning prayer, morning meditation, doing those prayers, working with 10-step during the course of the day, doing an evening review, which as far as I can tell are the things that keep me in fit spiritual condition, what do you think the subsequent belief system is you have? Here's what it is. It's not necessary you do that to stay sober. Really? Well, you guys might want to go on that crapshoot. I don't. See, I don't ever want to pick up a drink again. Ever. I know what alcohol does to a guy like me. I know what it does to every single human being in my life. So I think what I'll do is I'll just do what this book asks me to do. Get up in the morning, just like I did this morning. Set the alarm clock. Get my feet on the floor. Open the big book. Upon awakening, consider my plans for the day. Go through. Do the prayers. Do a meditation. Hand on the door. Walk out the door. Work with the 10 step all day long. All day long. Pause. Ask. Turn. Cease. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. Sixth sense. What do I do now? Boom. Line of the will. Come home this evening, pull out my big book, answer the questions for evening review, say a prayer, do a meditation. If I have the juice, go to bed. Get up tomorrow, do it again. Fit spiritual condition each day. My experience is recovery is not for sprinters. It's for marathon runners. And there ain't a lot of them around there. See, I don't think I've been sober that long, but I go to meetings sometime and I have the most time in the room. You know, what happened to all these people, right? What is that about? Again, thank God for the lineage I have. They talk to me about recovery is about being a marathon runner. One day at a time. Mark, you're going to do this, you just do it till the day you die. Most of my teachers, my mentors, and my lineage have all died. Don Fritz died with 39 years sobriety. Big Frank died with 41 years sobriety. One of my mentors just celebrated 60 years, Paul M. up in Chicago. He's currently dying as we speak. Another pal of mine, Joe H., had a lot of influence on me, died last year. A lot of my teachers, a lot of the people who influenced me. You know, it was interesting the other day, I was driving home and starting to pull in, and I was thinking to myself how much I would have liked to have talked to Don about some stuff. And then I thought to myself, you talk to Don all the time. Don is inside you. You know, I sat across from that man for years, and he transmitted to me. He's in me. He's in my DNA. He said, every conversation I have with Charlie or any other drunk I'm working with, and Joe's in me and Big Franker in me, and the way that I give that back is I share that, right? Because they went out the way I want to go out. They went out with men of integrity. They all had home groups. They all had sponsors. They were all working steps. They worked with 10 and 11. That's how I want to go out, just like that. So I don't have to get too fancy with this thing, right? That's why a simple group like Primary Purpose I enjoy. I enjoy it. Charlie and I were talking, and you know, we Alkies or something else. He said me, he started to complain one day because there were only 80 people here one Tuesday night. I said, what is wrong with you? I said, you're the only one in the world that will complain about 80 people, right? Immersed in the big book, studying the big book, right? Laying their experience alongside it. Am I doing this, right? I mean, what an incredible thing. You know, the book talks about, in the ninth step, our real purpose is to fit ourselves. I've been talking to you about fitting myself. To be of service to God, to my fellow human beings. See, if I don't do 1 through 9, the distance of 10, 11, I can't fit myself. I can't fit myself to speak with you. I can't fit myself to work with Charlie or any of the other people that I work with. So I do this stuff so that I can fit myself for what? To be of service to God and to my fellow human beings in every area of my life. Every area of my life. All my relationships, not just in these rooms. How is it with my employees? How is it with the people I work with? How is it when I go to Starbucks and there's a long line? There's a little blue hair lady in front of me in the drive-in and she's going a little slower than I like. How is it? Do I want to run her over? Do I have compassion? Right? How is it when things don't go my way? How is it in all areas? How are my finances? Right? How is it when I go to the bank? How do I manage all of this on my power without God? You start to look at those things. Second step, this idea of God. My personal experience is it has never been a struggle, ever, from the day I came in, and here's why. I needed power when I was brought to you. No different than I need now. And if, in fact, you have a first-step experience and realize you need power, you'll get real open-minded about the God issue. There was another thing probably that made the God issue very easy for me, and that was this. I knew that anything I thought I knew about God probably wasn't of God, and it had probably been fostered on me, either through a television set or whatever. So I did what the big book said in the second step. Which is, was I willing to believe in a power greater than myself? Yes. And then I came up with a concept that would work for me. See, I don't know about the rest of you, but a new concept for me when I came into the rooms, for some reason, I had the idea of an external God. Raised a Methodist, became a Catholic, in the church, statues. For whatever reason, never once did it occur to me that that relationship with God is an internal relationship. Not external. It is internal. It is possible to have conscious contact at all times. Not once did that occur to me. That was like a Cheech and Chong moment for me. Wow. Right? Page 55, great reality. When in the final analysis, it is only there that God may be found. Isn't that interesting? The very power that I need resides within me, but I'm blocked from it. That moved me into the third step. Right? Making this decision. Am I convinced my life run of my will, drunk or sober, cannot or will not work? You stop with that. You sit with that. Are you? Am I? It's one thing when you're brand new. Whether you look at that at 25 years, am I convinced of it now, sober, that my life run of my will cannot or will not work? And I sit with that. Creates a tension. That tension of self-will versus aligned with the will of God. Then you read all those incredible instructions about what it looks like when you and I live our life on self-will. You know, stuff like this. If my arrangements would only stay put, if only you would do as I wished, yada, yada, yada. And then that powerful paragraph took me a long time to understand. The idea that I will be happy and satisfied if I manage well. Another way I translate is, thanks for the information, I got it from here. Right? Some of you have experience with that one. Then it leads me up to where the book finally starts talking to me about my problem and why I loved alcohol so much. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problem. Because when I live a life based on self-will, at my very core, I am strictly selfish and self-centered even when I have kind motives. And when I am into self-will, I go through life being driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. And then what I do is step on your toes and you do retaliate. And then I come into the meetings and complain about you. Wait a little while before I get a hold of a sponsor who asked me to solve my problem in the third and fourth column because they don't have one, right? And so you come into that third step, and that incredible sentence that says, so mark all your troubles of your own making. By the way, if there's anyone sitting in this room tonight that think any of your troubles are any of making outside yourself, you've missed one of the key sentences in the whole book. There is so much power and freedom when you understand that you create the reality of your life and that all your troubles are of your own making. And you can drop the word blame from your vocabulary and you can really touch that and you know exactly what that means. And then above everything, Mark, you better get rid of your selfishness or your selfishness will kill you. You don't think they may kill you, do you? Yeah, they may kill us, right? See, I always have to see the connection between taking a drink as I move through the work. What's the connection between selfishness and taking a drink? Very simple. If I don't get rid of my self-will and selfishness and my trying to run the show, then a whole bunch of people in my life and the world aren't going to do what I want, and I'm going to get resentful. And when I get resentful, I get blocked from this power, which keeps me in fit spiritual position and a position of neutrality. And if I'm blocked and I get diseased long enough, the mind one day says, you know, Mark, you sobered up before there was corona. And maybe you've made a bit much out of this whole thing. And Mark, I'm here for you. I was there for you for 20 years, buddy. I still am. That voice starts to talk in that way, right? You begin to see that, you know. I had to have God's help. See, now I got clarity on my third step decision. I know exactly why I'm doing it, and there's no ambiguity, and there isn't any of this BS I hear, well, I gave it, they take it back, and they gave it. No, you didn't. You get clear on this thing, you make a decision. Bottom of page 62, what is it? From that day on until the day that I die, I have a four-part relationship with the God that I have experienced, which is what? He's the father, and I'm the child. He's the employer, and I'm the employee. He's the principal, I'm the agent, right? He's the director, and I'm the actor, and I look up those words so I'm clear about this relationship. See, agent, they get a, look up the word agent sometime. It means someone who's empowered to act for someone else. Start laying claim to the promises in the third step and the power in this program. So you do this work, you are an agent for God. You sit, you do sponsorship, or you take it into work. You've got power in your life to be an agent of and for God. Powerful, powerful stuff here. Oh, you still drink and go to meetings. No, no. So much more. So much more beyond that. Right? Power beyond your wildest dreams. Then you go into your third step, the prayer, affirmation of a decision, right? Think about the words behind that prayer. Can you imagine what it would be like if we could all really live this? You know, God, I offer myself to thee to fill with me, and you do with me as you want. Think about that. You do with me as thou wilt. I was 10 years in the program before I could practice and live that. See, it is not my business where I live and who's in my life and how long they're in my life and where I work. None of that is my business. The only thing I have to make my business is taking a course of action to stay in fit spiritual condition, and the rest gets added unto me. Now, there's another book that uses some similar verbiage. It goes like this. Seek ye first the kingdom, and I will give you the rest. Wow. But what a concept. See, I understood that. See, I got to do all kinds of work in that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous to understand all these spiritual books that have been in my life forever. See, I read that I don't know how many times. What's that mean? Seek ye the kingdom, I will add the rest unto you. I know exactly what that means. Then I make that decision, right? relieve me of the bondage of self, my selfishness. Doesn't matter how long I'm sober. What's my current selfishness? What am I up against today? Remember, ladies and gentlemen, what's your current stuff? See, I always tell people, take the last week. You leave here, I'll give you a little exercise to do over the next couple days. All of you in the past week have had anywhere from 5 to 10 fears that are consistently running through your mind. Write them down, because that's your current agnosticism. Might be around a relationship, it might be job, might be sobriety, might be money, might be your health, I don't know. But that's your current agnosticism, and there is no God. Because if there was a God, you wouldn't be experiencing the fear over and over and over again. That makes sense? Try it. See? I can't live in fear anymore. I stay in fear too long, I drink whiskey. It's too uncomfortable, right? So there's an exercise. Call a woman, you write the fear, right? Call them too, why do you have it? Book addresses that issue. So I make that decision, then I launch in the inventory, resentment inventory. Four column. Resent. Revisit, replay, right? Resent. People, institutions, principles. You make your list. I wrote 9 resentments. This time. Doesn't sound like many, but I work with the distance of 10 and 11, so I stay current. The reason I go back and I review 1, 2, 3, and I write inventory again, is I miss some stuff. Then the other thing that happens, at least has happened to me over a period of time, is you develop a stage character. It's called the spiritual guy. He's really sober now, and he's really hooked up, so not much bothers him. Really. Yeah, no, there's some stuff that bothered me. So I wrote some inventory, 9 of them. Fears, I had 7 fears. First time I wrote a fear inventory, and that was a long time ago, I must have had 9 or 10 pages. I was terrified of everything. Walking around acting like this tough, macho guy. Life terrified me from the time I got up till the time I went to bed. Women scared me to death. I was scared to be with you and I was scared to be without you. Scared to not get the job. I was scared to get the job. Right? Scared to have a friend. Scared to not have a friend. I mean, no, my God, no wonder I drank. Right? See? I understand the guy stays home and puts his head on the covers. Right? Terrified of life and not even knowing it. And the reason was, of course, I was experiencing complete separation. I think a lot of this program is about what I call conscious unity. For a lot of us, it starts by coming to a meeting and starting to feel a part of. If you get immersed in your meeting, not on the fringes, right? We all know the fringes. Sit in the back of the room, you know. Don't show up for group conscious, those kinds of things. So I write the inventory, 4 column. 1, what they did. 2, why? Bullet. Be very bullet. Not long sentences. Not the long story. Ego loves the long story. You know, like an example, you do, guy inventory, you know, column 2. Well, my dad was never there for me. I said, well, what do you mean by that? Were you born and he left? He goes, well, no, he worked a lot. I said, well, write down that he worked a lot. What you wrote in the second column was a lie, because my 3rd and 4th column stem from the truth I wrote in the second. Don't use a lot of words, right? See, I like writing inventory. Man, you get to let it all fly. No. Column 2, the little liar, he's a cheat, he's a grandiose, you just, oh God, it's fun. You know? Start getting the amped up as I think about it. You know? 3rd column, there is a self, or threatened or interfered with, and write those out. And then that beautiful explanation, the book spends about almost a page preparing me to move into the 4th column where I'm going to look at my part. What are my actions? Are selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or fear-based. What mistakes did I make? Where am I at fault? Where am I to blame? Because none of it's about them. And this ties into the paragraph I mentioned earlier, which is, if I'm self-worn right, I'm going through life being driven. And you better tie those two together. So my 3rd and 4th column, take the truth of the 2nd column and turn it into a lie. Every time. If you're not doing that, talk to somebody who has a lot of experience with inventory. Your 2nd column, there is a truth to what you're writing, right? But your 3rd and 4th better turn it into a lie. See? Wow. Okay, I get that. Then I write the fear inventory. The book asked me to address some. Mark, why do you have these fears? Self-reliance failed me. Okay? Is that true? Is that your experience? Yeah. Right? Like a big one you see in all these inventories is, I have a fear of abandonment. I told a guy this the other day, I said, well, let me help you why you have that fear. He said, okay, help me. I said, it's because you will be abandoned. Yeah. Everything you and I dearly love, for the most part, will be taken from us in this lifetime. Why? Because that's how life works, ladies and gentlemen. Right? Tremendous, tremendous love of God developed in my heart when I realized one day the one constant in my life from the day I drew my first breath to this breath has been God. The presence of God in my life. God will never abandon me. And from that place, I go out and embrace the world. See? So you can't take from me anymore. Nobody can. You can add to me, but you can't take from me. Why? Because I don't need anything from you. Give, 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 give. That's why I'm here. That's why you're here. All you can do is add to me. You can't take from me. Wow, what a position to live from. You see? Incredible stuff that happens through this inventory work, right? And then it gives you that exercise around fear. Ask God to remove the fear. Remind me what he'd have me be, my third step decision. I'm your agent, see? I'm God's agent. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. Remove the fear. Right? Sex inventory. Personal relationships. 9 questions. Write them. Answer them, right? If you knew, don't take a lot of time with inventory. That's my experience. If you got 2 years or less, write inventory 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. Why? Because you're up against yourself. That's why. This idea, I'll write one inventory and skip off into la-la land, that's insanity. Why? Because you're up against yourself. See, the ego just changes. Big Frank said to me one time, and I get it today, here's what he said. He said, your ego is as mysterious and powerful as God himself as far as you're concerned, and you can't defeat your ego. It takes the best of you. I know what he means. I've seen people long-term sobriety go back to whiskey behind that. Right? Bleeding deacon versus an elder. See, that's why I stay current with my work. That's why I'm sharing with you that I'm still writing inventory, right? And I'll always be writing inventory, and I'm still doing evening review. It's my current stuff. It's not old stuff. It's the stuff Mark's rubbing up against today. Right? Those fears that go through my mind in the course of a week. My current agnosticism. Normally you'll find associated with your fears are your attempts to arrange your life. Because you still live with the delusion you'll be happy and satisfied if you manage well. Right? Then you do the fifth step. I'm careful who I do fifth steps with. Why? Well, because the book says my life depends on it. That's a fairly important reason. This idea of anyone to listen to a fifth step? I don't think so. I'm not interested in reading inventory. Someone's interested in making me feel better. See? I'm interested in someone helping me write inventory to see where all my troubles are my own making. That's what they better do with me. Sometimes some of the books, well, list of Mark's assets and liabilities. As far as I can tell, I don't drink whiskey behind my assets. Seems to be my liabilities create my problems. So that's what I need. I need a closed mouth, understanding friend who understands what I'm driving at and understands that my life is on the line. I don't care how long you're sober. And he needs to be there with me in the trenches with me. I'm going into hell and facing myself. Be with me. Guide me. Help me see this stuff. Help me get free of this. Book says I get to cast it out, right? So I do inventory with people who understand and prove what I'm driving at, who have some experience with what I'm driving at. You do that fifth step, list of defects based on living a life based on self-will. Take it to God in 7. Take all of me, right? Good and bad. See, here's the thing I learned about good and bad. Sometimes Charlie's self-will run riot is God's will for me. Did you get that? Guys, a little slow on the uptake here. You all have people in your life. Their self-will run riot is God's will for you. Let go of the judgments of that. You know? Sometimes I hear stuff around 6 and 7 like, I still have never figured out what people mean by this. I'm working on my defects. Now, my mind does some George Carlin stuff with that, but, well, does that mean if I'm prideful it's more? Or is it less? See, I don't work. Only God can remove self-will has me blocked off from God. I don't work on any defects. I identify them. I take them to God. God, please, please, to be thy will, remove this stuff from me. Move on to 8. Make your list. One of the things initially I didn't like about working with Don is he said one of the most powerful words in the 8th step is the word all. Oh, no. All. Make a list of all the persons I've marked. And I would ask him questions. Well, what does that mean? He said, it means all. All the money. Going back as far as you can remember. All the amends going back as far as you can remember. Means all. A-L-L. Just write them down. Write them all down, right? Write them all down. Then he and I'd go through them. Then I'd put them on cards. Two times when inanimate objects talk to me. One's when I'm writing inventory and one's when I'm making amends. Got my inventory when I'm writing. Got a pile of cards in the ninth step. The reason I like to carry the cards, and I use a phrase, how free do you want to be, is I know what it's like to have made every conscious amends that I owe to pay every dime back. I know exactly what that feels like. I have experience with that. There's nothing in the world that equals that. Freedom at a level you cannot believe. I know what that's like. Did it take a long time? Yes. Took me 17 years to make every single amend from my first amends list. I do a lot of work in between. Of course I did. To pay all the money back. To go find these people. 7 states I had to go to. Telephone calls. Spend the money. Why? Because how free do you want to be? That's why. I didn't know any better. What an incredible experience that was. See, I didn't realize that, but until you lose your fear of death, including the death of your pride, you cannot embrace life. It became essential that I go back and clean those up. See, because in the 5th step, I disconnect from ego. In the 7th step, I connect with God. In the 9th step, I connect with you. And if you have a lot of unfinished amends, you're going to walk into rooms like Primary Purpose or your work or wherever, and you're always going to feel distant and separated from, just a little bit, right? 2 clicks off. See, I walk into a room like this, a lot of you I don't know, there is no separation between me and a single one of you. But when I had unfinished amends, there was separation. And I didn't see the connection. Everything is connected. Then you make these amends, and you get better jobs. And you clean this stuff up, and you start to see the connection between all of it, right? See, now you have a sense of wholeness. Because you disconnected from ego, you connected God, and now I connect to you. Now I enter the world of spirit. Now I get to work with the spiritual dimensions of the 10th and 11th step. Right? 11th step's what I do in my home in the morning. Me and my cat Hobo and my girlfriend Marcia. Alarm goes off and we get our feet on the floor. Boy, I get hooked up easy, you know. Upon awaking, consider my plans for the day. And you do all the prayers and the stuff. And you do the meditation. Give old Hobo a pat in the head and you walk out and I put my hand in that door and this mind starts and it's on, baby. And now a 10th step better be with me all day long. Right? Line of the will. Line of the will. See? All day long I'll go in and out of line of the will. Self-will, God's will, self-will, God's will. Get a little short, get a little upset, a little afraid. Right? God, remove that from me. Boom! Back in line again. All day long. Practicing the 10th step. Go from one event to another. Do sapping in the morning from 8:30 to 9. Now I'm going to go and I'm going to do something different. So it's a whole new experience, a whole new level of consciousness. Say the prayer in the 10th step. How can I best serve thee in this next hour? Thy will, not mine, be done. Finish that. Go on to the next one. You're going to go at the gym. We're going to pump weights. Whole new level of consciousness. God, how can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. Boom. All day long. Pause. When agitated and gulp. Ask. Turn. Get the force away from yourself. All day long. 10th step. Incredible, amazing stuff, ladies and gentlemen, to practice. Spend the rest of my life just working with the practices of the 10th step. I was bored in the rooms. Oh, no. There's so much you can do. Then I go home tonight, pull out the big book. Got an evening review. I got a set of questions that I get to answer. And those questions are designed to see how they do with the line of the will all day long. Am I awake to myself? Am I awake to how I impact other people? Everything from the modulation of my voice are getting short or interrupting. See? Katie and Charlie introduced me to a great phraseology I use called story stealing. Alkies, we're experts at it, right? Got 2, 3, 4 people, one of them starts a story. If a guy's really in self-will, he overrides and he tells you his story. Completely shuts you off to go with his story. We call it story stealing. Right? This is fabulous. Woke me up to that. I thought, my God, there you go, story stealing again. So we now we do that with each other. We'll be talking, and all of a sudden, one of them goes, "Sorry, Steven." But you start to wake up to yourself. You find out how fascinated you are. And I mean that. Seriously. I laugh at myself all the time. All the time. You know, incredible stuff. You work with those disciplines, and then the 12th step, a whole chapter, working with others. Pretty well have a set thing I do anymore when someone asks me to work with them. We sit down, we're going to go through the chapter, working with others. Because in that chapter, it tells the new guy what his responsibility is, and it says what my responsibility is. And then I spend a little time discussing what willing to go to think looks like. And I talk to them about the 12 steps. Now we're going to go through and work. Remember the time I went to Big Frank? He said, "Mark, don't ever soft sell this program." He said, "Hell, if spiritual living was easy, AE would have 50 million people in it." It's not. It's not for the faint of heart. But don't soft sell it. Don't lie to the guy about what willing to meeting link looks like. So I spend some time going through the 12 steps. I talk about the inventory. Talk about amends. Talk about the distance of 10-11. Talk about sponsorship. Send them away. Take 2-3 days. Pray about it. Think about it. Calls me up and says, "Yeah, want to do the work." Good. Come over. Get a notebook. April the 8th, 2008. On this date, I agree to go to InnyLinks for Victory Over Alcohol, and I know what that looks like, and sign it. And then as you take that person through the work, when they start whining and balking, you take them back to the book. The book they signed. Remember what you agreed? Click, hang up. See, he's responsible for his recovery, not me. See? And then we start the title page, and we go through the book. Poly, precise, specific, clear-cut instructions. Recovered alcoholic. Recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. Do I deal with spirituality issues? Of course I do. Will that continue as forever as far as I know? Yes. So what? That's exciting. As far as I know, this is the only game in town. I love it all. See? You better get in love with your defects as well as your good points, ladies and gentlemen. See? Total understanding, acceptance of yourself. Couple other things, I'm going to wrap it up. You know, I spent a few years in the rooms of AA in a fairly judgmental state of mind. I don't think that's unique to me. Everyone I know, and then you wake up to that, and then I had to go back to all those groups whose character I assassinated, make amends, and I've stopped doing that. You know, if you're a member of the primary purpose group and it's your home group, that's really the only one, quite frankly, you need to be worried about. Doesn't matter too much what the rest of them are doing. I need to go to the groups that feed my spirit that God sends me to. I think every single group that's out there is probably needed. I don't worry too much about anything else going on. You know, I spend my time and focus where I'm being sent, where I'm being guided to. You know, like-minded people. That's at the end of the day what it's really about. It's who I hang with. I wish to God I could do the easier, softer way. I bet a bunch of you in here wish you did too. I wish all I could do is just not drink, go to meetings. I mean it. You know, those daily disciplines get to be just a bit much after a while. You know? Yeah, you know, two times in my recovery, took all my books, just put them in the shit can, you know? I quit, you know? You know, unfortunately, I didn't set it out for pickup because then I'd have panicked. Cause, you know, and later in the day you go, "Well, I'm sorry, God." You know, got a little carried away, you know. This self-examination stuff just gets a little old sometimes, you know. And taking these phone calls and these guys to whine all the, you know, it's just, I tell people this. I don't do the disciplines of 10-11, do what I do, because I'm trying to be a nice guy. I do it to stay in fit spiritual condition, so I don't drink alcohol. And I think the other reason I do it is I finally got clear that Mark, on my own power, just does not function well in this world. I remember being 15 years sober, going to go to the grocery store. I'm sitting in my car, and I'm scared to death to go to the grocery store. Why? I don't know. It doesn't really matter. I was. And I guess at the end of the day, what the conclusion I really came to, it seems to me there's only two ways that I function in this world with some dignity and grace and ease and comfort. And that is that I got to have a lot of God, and the way that happened for me was the steps, the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. or I got to have a lot of vodka. And quite frankly, there's been the only two ways. I've served two masters. First 20 years of my life, I served alcohol. I'm in my 26th year serving God, and I like that a hell of a lot better. Right? So that's kind of the way that rolls off. God bless you all. I love you.